the kitchen that was nice. The rest of it was, too. All redone. Big, old-fashioned, kick-ass table in the dining room, with one side having a bench instead of chairs. Huge couch in the living room with lots of woodwork on it. Scrolled arms and massive pillows for the back in a print of some fancy, subtle cream and beige swirls. The couch was ornate, but it still looked comfortable. A lot of her stuff was his style. He liked it. Even if it wasn't, it worked, and he liked that too. It was pretty phenomenal. It was also confusing. He knew women paid a lot of money to have their hair done. He knew how much it cost for Hope and the girls for theirs. They were in rural Nebraska. It might cost more in big cities, but even as it was, it wasn't anywhere near what Hicks paid for him and Shaw to go to the barber. But it wouldn't set Greta to rolling in it. He went back out and saw her waving at something. So he looked that way as he moved to her and tipped up his chin at a woman who was walking her dog in front of Greta's house. The woman threw him an enormous beam through the dark as he sat his ass back down with his beer. He stretched out his legs out and crossed his ankles. He did this as he tried to remember how to do the getting to know you portion of being with a woman you're interested in. It seemed strange, all that had gone down between them, like she'd been a part of his life a lot longer than she had. But she hadn't, and he barely knew anything about her. He started it with, "How's your nose?"
"Better today. Thanks, Hickson," she answered.
"Your brother?" he asked.
"Good. Thanks, baby,"
she said softly. This how she talked whenever she spoke about her brother, when she wasn't laying shit out for him after he'd been a dick, that was. Hicks sucked back some beer and then asked, "You figure out what you're gonna tell him?"
"I think I'm gonna say I had a fall."
Hicks was surprised she was going to lie. So he looked from the dark night to her. "Yeah?" She let out a big breath she aimed at the night and said,
"Yeah, he..."
She turned to him.
"He can be unpredictable. Most of the time he would be able to process what happened, understand it, understand the guy was caught and he was going to be punished and he'd be upset for me. But he'd see that I'm okay and he'd deal. Other times..."
She didn't finish. "Other times what, sweetheart?" he prompted gently.
"Other times, anything can happen. He could get so upset and frustrated at not being able to do anything, he could get violent. He could regress to the point he's like a little kid and stick in that zone for a while, which is harder to cope with for the staff, because dealing with a young man with a brain injury is one thing. Dealing with a young boy who has tantrums or can turn sullen or uncommunicative is another."
She shrugged.
"So I think I have to lie. For him. There's nothing he can do anyway, it's over. To keep him safe, I'll give him an alternate version of events that doesn't harm anything. No one would tell him. He won't find out."
After she gave him all that, he whispered, "I don't know how you do it." She genuinely looked confused when she asked,
"Do what?"
He lifted his beer in a circle to indicate everything. All of it. Work. Look after him. Handle what happened. Keep on keeping on.
"I have no choice."
He transferred the bottle to his other hand so he could reach out and take hers. "If one of the kids..." he began.
"Don't," she said quickly. "Don't think about it. It happened to us. But it doesn't happen a lot, so don't think about it. Not with one of your kids, not with anybody."
"What I'm trying to do is get in your headspace so I can be in a place of understanding with you," he explained. When he quit talking, she looked at him like she'd never seen him before. So he gave her fingers a squeeze. "Greta?"
"I'm, like, really, really glad I unblocked you, Hickson," she declared.
And after she gave him that, Hicks leaned into her and pulled her hand to his mouth to touch it to his lips so he wouldn't do something else, like pick her up and carry her into her house and touch his lips to other things. He relaxed in his chair, put their hands back between them, and remarked, "I still don't know how you do it. This is a nice house, sweetheart. And I'm in the position to know how nice it is, being in the market for my own. You work. You look after your brother. You dress great.
You made this a great space. It's like you can make miracles. He could have gone on, but he didn't, because she'd returned her gaze to the street and lifted her mug of tea up to her mouth, both in what he read as an attempt to hide her face. "Did I say something wrong?" he asked, twisting their hands so their fingers were facing up and he could run the tips of his along the insides of hers. Her head turned again, so her eyes could light on their hands before they lifted to him.
"Keith gave us this."
His fingers quit moving.
"Keith?"
"My ex-husband, Keith. He's, very wealthy. I didn't, want it, but he impressed on me that I needed to take it, so the divorce settlement was exceptionally comfortable. For me, and for Andy."
Hicks just stared at her.
We were dating when Andy got hurt. They were close even before. He always took care of Andy," she shared. "He still does, kind of. And me. Well, just in the sense the settlement bought my house."
"Shit."
"And my car."
"Christ."
"And my furniture."
"Fuck."
"And it pays for Andy's home and will for a good time, so I can, you know, not having a mortgage or a car payment or, other stuff, I'll be able to do it for maybe, ever."
She stopped talking. "That's very wealthy, Greta," Hicks said low. He watched her swallow. Hicks looked to the street and threw back some more beer. He did this thinking he could never do that, buy her a house outright, a car outright. Hell, he couldn't even help her take care of her brother, not with setting up his own house. And what would be coming up with his kids as they finished high school and entered life? He'd already dipped into his uncle's inheritance to buy furniture and pay for the divorce, and he'd need more. He didn't get paid shit, but he'd never be able to buy anyone a new car outright. No way a house. Not in his life.
"Hickson?"
she called hesitantly. "And he divorced you because of your mother?" Hicks asked the street.
"He took care of Andy and obviously gave me a really good life. I mean, I worked and sometimes I sang, but, you know, we had a comfortable life mostly because of him."
"He bet they did."
"But, well, I gave her money, and he hated her, and it bothered him that I did."
What? He looked again to her. "Sorry?" She did another shrug.
"He really hated her. Like I said, we were together when the accident happened. He knew Andy before and after. She hurt him. And she wasn't ever nice to me, so me giving her money."
"She's your mother." Greta shut her mouth. She opened it right back up to say a loaded.
"Yeah."
He didn't know what that was loaded with. But he didn't ask after that. He asked, "So that's it? He had you and gave you up because your mother is a parasitical bitch?"
"Well, that, and I,
she tried to slide her hand away. Hicks kept hold of it. Her focus sharpened on him, and she whispered,
"I didn't want to have a family."
"And he did," Hicks guessed.
"Yes."
"And you two didn't talk about that before you got married?" Her head twitched.
"No, we did. He knew."
That made Hicks's brows draw tighter. "So what was his beef?"
"He thought he could change my mind."
"That's not a beef, Greta. That's bullshit." Her fingers convulsed around his. "Why didn't you want a family?" he asked.
"I had one."
He twisted her way. "I get your mom isn't great, Greta. And it goes without saying, I hate that you and your brother gotta live with what she did to him. But I mean a family that's yours."
"I had one, Hicks."
"The one you make," he explained.
"I raised Andy Hickson," she told him. "He was mine. He was never hers. I took a bus to the hospital when she called me after she had him, and the nurses got him for me and put me in a little room where I sat in a rocking chair and held him, and that was it. He was mine. And I mean that in an emotional sense, but also in an everything sense, because she had nothing to do with him."
What? Come again?"
"Nothing." She shook her head. No bottles. No diapers. No forcing him out of bed for school in the morning. We weren't latchkey kids who had to look after ourselves while Mom was out making a living. She lived her life with two kids in her trailer she had to put up with and maybe throw some money at so we could eat. I could buy Auntie diapers or go to Goodwill to get him clothes. I mean, in the beginning, I had to go to school and someone had to look after him. But if I couldn't get a neighbor to help out, I'd come home and he'd be bawling because he had a dirty diaper and she barely pulled it together to give him some food. So she'd hand him off to me, and then she'd vanish. Other than that, we didn't exist until I started making money and she could lean on me to give some of it to her. He couldn't believe what he was hearing. You're joking, he growled. She shook her head, again trying to slide her hand away, but Hicks held tight. She gave up trying to get away and kept giving him her story.
Normally he would walk, but it was raining. So she was the one who picked him up from that party because I was out with Keith and Andy didn't want to interrupt us, so he called her for a ride. And unfortunately, she felt in the rare mood to give him one.
Hicks looked back to the street, and the amount of beer he threw back was a lot bigger.
So now you get it,
she noted in a strange voice that regained his attention. Get what? He asked.
Get how Keith felt about her. About me not wanting a family because I'd already raised a son and started doing that at 14. So I wasn't feeling doing it again. This also because of her. How all that, being what she made, could...
She gave a tentative tug on her hand, but when he didn't let go, she quit doing it.
Make him divorce me,
she finished. No, I don't get that. She blinked several times before she asked.
You don't?
Hell no. Her mouth got soft. Her eyes went troubled. And she said quietly,
Hicks, he lived with it for 10 years.
Sweetheart, maybe he feels okay about himself. That he left you to your life, putting you in a nice house, in a nice car, in a nice town, with your brother in a good place where they take care of him. But you're still here, and he's... wherever he is, and it isn't here with you, so no, I don't get it. I think he's an idiot. Something lit in her eyes like humor, with a whole load of something more before it faded, and she said,
You haven't even met Andy yet.
I've met your mom, and I haven't led my life or my career in law enforcement all in this town, so I know women like her, and I know they're bad news, and I knew that babe before she even opened her mouth. I got more of it when she did. I get it. I get it would be frustrating. I don't think bad about the man because of that. Because this shit is extreme. And he obviously wanted to look out for you in a variety of ways. He just totally fell down on that job.
But I was weak about my mom, she declared. It wasn't like she'd ingratiate herself, or she was around all the time being annoying. She'd come and she'd go. But when she'd come, she'd always have her hand out. And part of me giving her money was the fact that if I did, she'd go without making a mess of things. Because she'd make a mess of things if she didn't get what she wanted. But part of it was because, well, she's far from great, but she's the only mom I've got.
Greta, baby. She's clearly even less of a peach than I expected. But I've seen kids take care of parents who beat them. Who sexually abused them, who let men or women into their homes repeatedly. And it was them who would administer the abuse. I get that she'd manipulate shit to get what she wants, making it hard for you to say no. I also get it's just straight up hard to say no to a parent. It isn't that one person is stronger, being able to cut that shit out of their lives. It's maybe that your heart is larger that you'd look after her. But it's also not just that. It's like the chicken and the egg. No one can say what's the right answer and how to handle that. It's just one of life's things that we deal with the way our heart tells us to do it. And there's never anything wrong with that. She said nothing. She just stared at him with those big eyes and that beautiful face that even a broken nose couldn't make any less beautiful. And taking that in, Hicks knew even more the man who divorced her was an idiot. But even with all she'd just laid on him, Hicks felt fucking great. Because he couldn't give her a house, or a car, or help out with her brother, much, this being financially, until after the girls were out of school. But he could put up with her mother, and with the way her voice got when she talked about him, he had not the slightest hesitation of having her brother in his or his kids' lives. So yeah, if this worked out, he could give her that. And he had a feeling that meant more to her than a top-of-the-line Cherokee ever would, or a diamond ring. He threw back more beer and heard her cautious, "Hicks?" He looked to her. "Yeah?" More caution when she muttered,
"I just, gave you a lot."
"Uh-huh," he agreed. She studied him. He leaned to her and whispered, "Put me to the test."
"Sorry?"
"I'll pass." He watched her eyes get bright with wet. He did not want to make her cry. He liked she felt that much from what he said. But he never wanted to be the man who made Greta cry. "We're new," he stated. "Life has thrown me some curveballs lately, so I have no idea how it's going to go. It's obviously thrown more at you and has since birth. What I do know is how much I like being with you, how good it feels, and I want to take care of that. I let your mother put that at risk once. That was stupid, but I'm not stupid. So I learned that lesson, and it won't happen again. And I think there's nothing in my life I've heard that's more beautiful than what you give your brother, before he got hurt and after. I also know I can say all that till I'm blue in the face. I still have to prove it. So put me to the test. Go for it. At least with all that, I'll pass. What I don't want is to make you cry about it, Greta. You laid it out, and it is what it is. And all you gotta do now is sit back and see.
Okay, I really want to have sex with you, like, right now," she announced.
His cock felt that, but his lips only smiled. "Baby, I'm not making love to you 2 days after you got your nose broke."
"It's been 3.
His lips kept smiling. "Greta, sweetheart, I'm not making love with you 3 days after you got your nose broke."
"We won't kiss."
"The fuck we won't," he growled.
"We can..."
He gave her hand a firm shake and leaned to her. "Weekdays. Shaw's curfew is 10. He's gonna be home soon, and I gotta be home with my boy. But Friday, Shaw plays ball, and you won't be singing. I'll tell him to maneuver a sleepover with one of his buds, and after the game, we'll have all night." Her eyes instantly rolled to the ceiling of her porch, while her lips moved, but no words came out. "Babe?" he called.
"Hush,"
she shushed him. He started chuckling. "Greta?" She rolled her eyes back.
"Hush, Hicks. I'm counting the hours so I can count them down."
He stopped chuckling and busted out laughing. Then he leaned farther and took her mouth in a slow, gentle, wet kiss. When he was done, he pulled back an inch. "Tied you over?"
"Not even close."
He touched his lips even more gently on the tip of her nose before he sat back, kept hold of her hand, and lifted up his beer. When he'd taken a tug and dropped it, he asked, "Okay, so what in the hell is a wash, rinse, and set?" That was when Greta left. He turned to watch, and when she quit, she explained a wash, rinse, and set. Having a dick, he discovered he really didn't need to know. But he was glad he did.
Chapter 19. So we're good. Hickson. The next night, Greta met him at the top of the steps to her porch, her feet in thick socks, a slouchy cardigan on, a big scarf wrapped around her neck, her head tipped back, the swelling nearly gone around her nose, the bruising still angry, but receding.
"Beer?"
she asked in a firm tone. He smiled at her. "Yeah, but kiss first." She leaned into him, put a hand on his chest, and they exchanged a short, wet kiss before she broke away and whispered,
"Be back."
She went in, and he went to his chair on her porch. It was nippy, dark, Mid-October weather in Nebraska was still nice during the day, but when the sun went down, the chill set in. He turned his head and saw that she had her mug of tea sitting on the table by her chair. She also had a book and some catalogs. He was eyes back to the street when Greta returned, handed him his beer, and then adjusted her chair so it was set butted up to his. Then she settled in it, so she was pressed to the side of the chair closest to him. Her feet up on the pad in the seat, knees falling to his side, and her hand came out and ran down the inside of his forearm. He transferred his beer from that hand to his left, thinking she wanted to hold hands, also thinking he was totally okay with that. But she engaged her other hand, pressing his right hand flat between both of hers, her eyes watching. It was an affectionate touch, but there was something poignant about it that concerned him. "Everything okay, sweetheart?" he asked.
"You have really beautiful hands," she murmured, still pressing his between hers before she laced her fingers through his, dropping her hand away, bending their linked ones toward them with elbows resting on the arm of the chair as she rested her head on his shoulder. He liked, she thought, about his hands. He was still concerned.
"Greta, something happened today?"
Nope, she answered. But before he could prompt further, she said,
she stopped and started again. "Having you for a spell. Then things happened and I didn't have you."
He felt her head move on his shoulder like she was shaking it.
"I like my house. I don't mind being alone. Or I didn't. Then I had you to sit on the porch with me and I minded. And I, well..."
Her tone became hesitant.
"I like having you back."
He twisted his neck so he could kiss her hair before he righted it, and replied gruffly,
"I'm glad you let me come back."
She mumbled, digging her head into his shoulder for a beat, then settling in. He decided to move them beyond this, or they wouldn't be sitting on her porch, getting to know each other in a way he could leave and get back to his house to make certain his son came home on time after his study date with Wendy at her house.
No, they'd be doing something else. Something they couldn't do for as long as he'd like, and after, he couldn't stay with her, sleep beside her, because he had to go home to his boy. And he knew from experience the swelling could go down, the bruises recede, but it took weeks for a broken nose to heal. And the longer he gave her to do that, the less pain he might inadvertently cause making love to her. So he had to give her as much time as they both could endure, which was 2 more days. Therefore, he told her, "Shaw's at his girl's house studying. Told you earlier in that text, babe. We were having dinner together tonight. That's because I needed time with him. There's stuff going down with Wendy's family. Shaw's feeling the need to keep an eye on her. But apparently, her folks let them study in her room. So I needed to lay some things out about that. I also need to be home when he gets there so I can give him the eagle eye to make sure nothing came of that."
"Risky business, letting a handsome young man study in your daughter's bedroom," she observed.
"Yep." Greta laughed softly. "The stuff going down isn't good stuff, baby. So it's doubtful Shaw will go for anything. And this, he hoped his son wouldn't do, knowing that her dad was growing sicker, weaker, and depressed from his treatments. That depression also hitting the family since they had to watch it. Hicks had been wrong the night before. The doctors felt the treatments were working, but it was coming clear that road wasn't going to be easy.
"Shaw's a good guy, so you're probably right," she replied.
"I also shared I'd be disappointed if he took that road, even if it seemed Wendy needed that kind of closeness for whatever reason she would have."
"And you're a good dad," she murmured before she went on. "Not an easy chat, darling. I feel your pain. I remember having that conversation with Andy. He'd been young, but he'd been popular with the girls. Keith had already had it, but I found condoms in his room, so I had to have it again."
"At least he had condoms," Hicks muttered, doing it thinking something else. Thinking he kind of hoped the kid got himself some before having the chance at any normal relationship swept away by his mother. Also thinking it hadn't occurred to him how much of a parent Greta had been until she gave him that info. She was right. It was not an easy conversation to have with your son, your brother, or any kid. He knew that from past experience, and some that was very recent. And you didn't do it, in most cases, unless you were a parent.
He didn't use them,
she shared.
He didn't tell me that. He got ticked I talked to him about it because he was embarrassed. He complained to Keith and he told Keith that.
Hicks had no response she'd likely want to hear.
And now I kind of wish that he'd, you know,
she said. He knew. And he was beginning not to be surprised Greta's thoughts ran the same way his did. Yeah, he whispered. Her fingers started fiddling with his fingers in a manner that he liked, and Hicks decided it was now time to take them out of this because it felt heavy, and she had to live that heavy every day. She didn't need it on her porch when she was unwinding at night. So he asked, "You do your porch thing all year long?" He felt her head move, and he knew she was looking up at him.
"My porch thing?"
He twisted his neck again to look down at her. "Sitting out here to unwind at night." She grinned and settled back in, aiming her eyes to the street. So he did too, and took a sip of his beer while she spoke.
"I have to give it up around Thanksgiving. I can bundle up, but then it gets too chilly. I thought about getting a space heater, but I have a great house. I might as well use more of it than my bed, kitchen, and porch for a few months a year."
He chuckled, replied, "Yeah," and started returning the fiddle of fingers as he asked, "Why do you do it?"
"Sit on the porch?"
she asked back.
"Yep."
She flipped out her other hand toward the street.
"Because of that."
He was confused.
"Your street?"
"That, and the fact that's how it is. Quiet. Nice. People keep up their homes, tend their yards, plant flowers, put out decorations. It's a good view, and it's always changing. Plus, they walk their dogs in front of my house and say hey, sometimes stop and chat."
She tipped her head on his shoulder so he knew she was looking at him again. So he twisted his neck to catch her eyes.
"I grew up in a trailer park."
When she let that lie, he grinned at her and asked, "Am I supposed to take that as a dire admission?" She laughed softly again and turned her attention back to the street. He took in her hair, her smooth forehead, her taped nose, before he also turned back to the street while she was answering.
"Not really. But our park wasn't a very good one. Even so, there were a lot of nice people in it. Good people. They helped look after me. Then when Andy came, they helped me look after him. But there was always a lot happening. A lot of noise, folks fighting, coming and going at all hours, because that was their work schedule or it was their play schedule. Parties, loud music, cops showing. A place like this is like heaven."
Hicks stared at the street.
"I like the city,"
she informed him.
"I like malls and cineplexes and nice restaurants. But I like better going to the grocery store and running into someone I know and having a natter. I like getting a coffee and knowing the lady who runs the place and she knows me, because that's the only coffee place in town. And it has good coffee, but it kind of feels like you're getting coffee at a friend's house. I like the fact that most people know most everyone else and they care. If someone dies, they make a casserole. Someone gets engaged, they buy a gift. I know there are bad seeds, I know bad stuff still happens, but it kind of feels like the trailer park, but without the bad parts. Like a big family. The good kind of family."
Hicks stared at the street, feeling something move deep in his chest. And he knew what that something was. It was the understanding that that was what Hope had wanted them to have. Not just their family, but her giving it to Hicks, too. She'd never explained it that way. Maybe didn't know how. Because it was what she grew up with. She just knew how good it was, and she wanted the people she loved to have it. He'd just never understood it, the gift she'd wanted them to have. Until now. Greta must have felt his thoughts had turned, because her head came off his shoulder, and he felt her gaze. He looked to her.
"Do you think I'm crazy?"
she asked. "Not even a little bit." She studied him closely.
"Then what is it, darling?"
He gave it to her without hesitation. And he'd discover he maybe shouldn't have hesitated, but he should have been more careful with how he gave what he gave. She didn't explain it that way, but I think that's why Hope wanted us to move here. What she wanted to give us.
She grew up here. She knew how good of a place it was to do that and more. Just have. Life in a small town where the mall might be a trek, and the only movie theater is 15 miles away, and there are only two screens. Something crossed her expression he wasn't a big fan of before she twisted away to grab her mug and let go of her hold on his hand. Greta, he called as she sipped, and when she looked at him, he noted, it's what she wanted for us. I didn't get it then, but I'm getting it now. Think I was getting it before, after Nat was killed, what a shock that was, because that kind of thing never happens here. I'm getting how folks look down on small towns, and maybe in my way, I did that too. How they think the people in them are hicks. How nothing much happens in a small town, so folks think the people in them don't know much about life, but it isn't that. They just get more of the good without the shit leaking in. And now, getting that, I don't mind as much that my boy is going into the Marines, because he's gonna have learned all he needs to know about being a good man, a good person, leading a good life because of the goodness he grew up around that wasn't screwed up with big city shit.
Yeah,
she agreed. She still had a look on her face he didn't like. So he asked carefully, okay, sweetheart, you get it too. Why do you look like I killed your puppy? Her expression turned startled. Then it softened with her smile as she put her mug back, twisted his way, and leaned into him, getting close, her breasts brushing his arm. Her smile not its usual luminous, but kind of sad.
It happens like this, she stated confusingly. You get low. Ask yourself a lot of questions. What did you do? What could you have done? Then you get pissed. Why didn't they see what we had? Why didn't they fight for it with me? And then you come to understand. You come to understand a lot of things. And that's where you are right now, Hicks. You're coming to understand.
He wasn't. Not even close. But he guessed. Are you talking about hope? She nodded. Babe.
It's okay, Hickson, she said quietly.
Her smile gone, her face still soft, but the sadness was not close to hidden in her eyes. He didn't like that look. And he still didn't understand. What's okay?
You said that night after the grocery store incident that it was an uncomfortable realization, that she was a good mom, but other than that, she tipped her head to the side in a kind of shrug. The truth is, you loved her. You don't see the reasons why right now because you're ticked at her, but they'll come back through. You'll remember them and the good times and...
Stop, he ordered. She stopped. He watched her closely as he asked, are you saying you think I'm gonna get back with Hope?
You loved her a lot, Hickson. Everyone saw it, even me.
That was when he stared at her, before he started chuckling. He didn't roar with laughter, mostly because Greta wasn't looking sad anymore. She was looking miffed. So he shared, I'm not gonna get back with her. The sad came back.
You don't know what the future will bring.
Now he got it. And it was definitely funny. But since she didn't think so, he had to take the time to explain. Right. He turned to her, transferred his beer again, and lifted a hand to cup her jaw, moving in to bring their faces even closer. Even if she didn't end our marriage, not actually wanting to end our marriage, but as a play to get an expensive ring, she never told me why she ended our marriage. Maybe it was dawning on her how I'd react to the real reason. Maybe she felt justified and truly thought I would get with her program. But regardless of all that, Greta, since then she's behaved in ways that, yeah, I loved her. There were reasons. I'm not feeling them right now because I'm not feeling real warm and fuzzy about Hope right now. And maybe some miracle will occur and she'll sort her shit out so I can remember some of that fondly, so we have some kind of relationship that isn't bitter or difficult, and we can carry on raising our kids and being their parents in a way that isn't ugly. But other than that, babe, believe me, it is well and truly done.
I know you can think that, Hickson, but history has a strong pull.
What was she really telling him? He withdrew a couple of inches and dropped his hand from her jaw. Are you still hung up on this Keith guy? He asked. Her eyes rounded, her lips tipped up, and her body started shaking. Her answer was shaky, too.
No.
So what are you saying? He pressed. Her humor died.
Hicks, I saw you with her.
Babe, you shared a decade with a man who... He jerked his head to the side to indicate her house. If what he gave you when he divorced you is any indication, when he had you, he gave you and the brother you adore a pretty damn good life. I don't have to see you with him to know you're speaking from some kind of experience right now.
Hicks.
Everyone saw me with Hope. It's a small town. We got kids, so we're always out and around. And I don't know why, maybe it's because I'm in an elected position, but they had more than a healthy interest in her and me. And I don't gotta say, because you gotta know. Now you and me.
You don't know why?
She asked, her eyes big again. No. People gossip, but I get they do it more about me. Hope and me, the kids and me. You and me.
You don't know why,
she repeated, as a statement this time, her words again shaking. I'm not seeing anything funny.
Hickson, you're hot.
Greta. She put her fingers over his lips.
No, baby, seriously. You're hot. You're like movie star hot. You're like a 24/7 reality program starring yourself. You don't even have to do anything interesting, but you wear that sheriff's shirt and it makes you more hot. You looked great with Hope. Your kids are gorgeous. You are like the royal family of Glossop.
He wrapped his hand around her wrist and pulled her fingers away, but didn't let her go when he declared, "That's ridiculous."
Apparently, our sheriff hasn't deduced the pull of a hot guy law enforcement officer,
she muttered over his shoulder. Not hiding, she thought this was hilarious. Greta, he growled. She grinned and looked back at him.
Get on Facebook sometime, or Google, or anywhere.
Fuck. There's pictures of me? She leaned into him.
No, Hicks. There's pictures of random hot guys. Women are taking that action back. Men have spent years ogling calendars and magazines, objectifying women, reducing them to a pretty face, a head of hair, and a hot bod. With social media, there's probably more pictures of shirtless hot guys with six-packs, wearing cowboy hats or shrugging off police shirts, than there are of oiled-up hot chicks rolling around on Ferraris.
She pulled back and finished with sham seriousness.
Of course, I frown on that entirely. Turnaround, in my book, is not fair play.
She was totally lying, and she was very cute. However, I'm not getting back together with Hope. Her humor died. Hicks curled his hand around the back of her neck. I'm getting the life you led. You don't expect good things to come to you. What I hope is that you think I'm a good thing, and you got me. We work on this, you'll keep me, because I hope I've made it clear. I want you to. I won't stray. I won't go back to her. But I also get I have to prove that, too.
Hickson.
And I will.
Okay,
she whispered, her hand coming up between them to slide along his jaw and back into his hair.
And just to say, you know, Keith's already remarried. But even if he wasn't, he gave up on me. And I loved him. We had a good life. I missed it when it was gone. I missed him. But that's done, baby. Because he did the one thing I can maybe understand due to the circumstances, but I can't forgive. He gave up on me.
Her eyes tipped down to his mouth, then back to his, and she kept whispering.
And there is the aforementioned fact that you're hot. But I failed to note that I am somewhat enamored with your creative uses of my headboard.
He was glad of that. Almost more than he was pleased to hear her ex was remarried. And he was thrilled to get that news. So we're good, he murmured, moving closer, seeing her beautiful face but thinking about her headboard.
We're so good,
she breathed in reply, tilting her head. Hicks took her mouth. It was necessarily gentle. It was also wet. It lasted a long time. It was its usual spectacular. And he didn't care his dick started to get hard during it after Greta started nibbling his lips and mewing in his mouth. It further didn't stop until they heard,
Greta? Sheriff?
He had his hand tangled in the back of her hair,
She had hers wrapped tight around the side of his neck. When they both turned their heads to the street to see a man and a woman. A different woman this time, out with a dog on a leash.
Sheriff?
The man grunted, clearly unamused that his wife had interrupted and trying to pull his woman along. She was standing solid and staring up at them, smiling huge.
How are you two?
She asked.
Nancy,
her man bit out.
We were great,
Hickson told her. The woman's smile got even bigger.
Hicks,
Greta hissed, but he could tell she was laughing.
Sorry,
the man called, and put more force into it with his wife so she would actually start moving.
We'll let you get back to it. Have a good night.
Night, guys,
Greta called. The man waved behind him, still dragging his woman and also his dog. The woman called.
Night, Greta.
Greta turned to him, and when he felt her gaze, he tore his annoyed one from the departing couple.
Well, that killed the mood,
she noted. It unfortunately did.
What were you saying about good people in a small town?
He asked. She busted out laughing but kissed him quickly in the middle of it. When she sobered, she looked deep into his eyes and announced,
I'm telling Andy about you tomorrow.
And he knew he'd at least passed one test.
Brilliant. That means a lot, baby, he said softly.
Yeah,
she agreed.
When you're ready for me to meet him, I'm there, he promised.
She shot him a happy smile.
I kinda can't wait.
Her hand, still at his neck, gave a squeeze.
He likes cop shows. He's gonna love you.
He grinned at her. She moved in, brushed her lips against his jaw, and moved out, murmuring,
Drink your beer, Smokey.
10-4, Angel.
Greta laughed softly. He glided his hand from her hair, settled in his chair, and threw back some beer. And then Hicks stared into the quiet night, drinking beer and keeping it light as he got to know his woman, pushing it to the last minute until he had to go home and wait for his son. Late the next morning in his office, after he did what he did every day since things cooled with the case, this being going over Nat Calloway's file hoping something would jump out at him, Hicks was reading Donna's report on a bust-up she and Larry had waded into the night before at the Lasso, the Country and Western Club outside Yucca, when he heard Hal call,
Boss?
Hicks looked up to see the man in his door.
Yup.
Hal walked in.
He
stopped talking, but didn't stop moving until he was standing between the chairs in front of Hicks's desk. He looked uneasy.
This could mean anything coming from Hal.
Damn.
Just what, Hal?
Hicks prompted. Hal moved his neck in an uncomfortable way before it seemed like he forced himself to look in Hicks's eyes, and he rushed out.
I got no plans on Saturday.
Sorry?
Hicks asked.
I could...
Hal gave a short cough and started again.
Ashley said she'd make sandwiches and bring them over. And I could, help you all out, moving you to your new place.
Hicks stared at him a beat before he inquired.
You're volunteering to help me move?
Not like as a brown nose or any of that shit,
Hal said shortly.
I didn't think that,
Hicks returned immediately.
I thought maybe I should call in the doc and have your head examined because you clearly forgot the stories of what a huge pain in the ass it was to get that sofa in my apartment, and I don't figure it'll be any less of a pain getting it out.
He shrugged. His lips twitched and he concluded,
You're up for that torture, I'm not gonna say no. But I am gonna supply the pizza and beer at the end. And Ashley can come and join us then, but she doesn't have to make sandwiches.
She likes doing stuff like that,
Hal murmured.
I figure around noon when everyone is plotting my murder, sandwiches will be appreciated.
Hicks smiled at him.
We're gonna start at 8, man, but any time you get there would be good.
Hal smiled back.
I'll be there at 8.
Right. Hal looked like he didn't know what to do, so his movements were awkward when he turned to walk away. Hicks called his name, and he turned back.
Just want to say at this juncture that I'll be getting on writing those commendations for yours and Betts' files. And not because you're helping me move. Because you both went beyond the call. Her looking for Nat, You, riding that hunch that guy would toss the weapon and finding that gun? It was good work, Hal. Not just solid. It was smart and showed serious initiative. We ever find him, you tied that bow. And I'll make sure that's in your file.
Hal's voice sounded clogged when he said,
Thanks, Hicks. Not sure why you're thanking me, but you're welcome.
Hal nodded, moved out looking even more uncomfortable. And that didn't change when Donna passed him walking in, and she did it smiling at him. She came right to his desk, and her smile went strange as she said,
It sucks I gotta dim the glow of whatever you said to Hal, leading him to tackle the Herculean effort of proving he's a decent human being. But Jep's here.
Hicks looked out the window to see Hope's father standing at reception.
Jesus shit, Hicks muttered.
You want me to tell him you're busy?
She offered.
He did.
But that wouldn't nip this in the bud like he had to do. So he shook his head, coming up from his chair. I'll talk to him. He followed her out, but stopped at the back of the aisle between desks and called.
Jep, you want to come back?
Yeah, son.
Jep returned, and then moved through the swinging half-door. Hicks watched him, and did it noting Jep, who was always sure of himself, looked even more awkward than Hal had. They shook hands when Jep arrived at him, but they said nothing until Hicks walked him into his office and closed the door behind him. He moved to the back of one of the chairs at his desk, stopped, turned to the man, and crossed his arms at his chest.
What can I do for you?
He asked.
You got time to have lunch, Hickson?
Jep asked back.
Not really.
Hicks lied.
Son.
Jep, I got a phone.
You got a phone. We need to talk about something, you can call me.
You want to have lunch? You can call me about that too.
You showing here, it tells me this is either official business or it's something else. If it's official, you can talk to me here. If it's something else, we gotta have another conversation.
Jep's hands started to move up to his collar, dropped, and he blew out a breath between pursed lips before he said,
I'm sorry, Hickson, but I'm here because I gotta urge you strongly to have a sit-down with my daughter.
Hicks didn't move a muscle.
Right. Since that's the case, I hate to do it, but I'm gonna have to do it. This is my place of business, Jep. You don't pin me here because you know I'm gonna be here and Hope's activated you to deal with her shit. That isn't right, it isn't appropriate, and I'll end with it not being your style.
It's important.
I don't care.
She's the mother of your children, Hicks.
We got a problem? He asked.
His ex-father-in-law stared at him a beat before he shook his head once.
No.
Nope.
He lifted a hand palm out and again dropped it almost before he got it up.
I know you've moved on. Here she's a great gal.
None of my business.
But Hope's got some things she wants to explain to you. And she knows she's messed it up, so she can't approach you. She sent me as a proxy. I'm her father.
This time, he lifted both hands low to his sides.
What am I supposed to do?
Hicks gave him the obvious answer. Tell her no. Jep looked to the wall beyond Hicks's head. Hicks gave it a few moments before, quietly, he stated, This can't happen again, Jep. It's not right how you went about this, and it's not right how Hope asked you to intervene. She wants a chat she can grow up, suck it up, and ask me for one. Jep's eyes came to him, and his face was set to stubborn.
You got two girls. You'll learn. They grow up, but they never quit being your babies.
Maybe you're right, he allowed. Maybe one day I'll have cause to remember this and feel like an ass, but if I do, what I'm gonna say is gonna sound harsh, Jep. But it'll be in the middle of me already feeling like an ass, because I know I'm in the middle of a situation where I'm in the wrong for being where I am and doing what I'm doing.
Jep looked ticked for a second, before that wore away, and he muttered,
Damned if you ain't right. Knew it before I walked in here, but...
He shook his head and finished at the same time Hicks's cell rang.
I'll talk to her.
Obliged, Hicks muttered, walking to his phone that was sitting on his desk, saying,
I hope you get part of what she's done is possibly put important things we share that I'm thinking mean something to the both of us in a bad place.
Nope, son. I did that not having the fortitude to tell my girl to do right.
But Hicks didn't hear Jep's reply.
because he saw his screen told him Greta was calling. At that time, she should be off to Sunnydown to take her brother out for lunch. Why would she be calling?
Gotta take this, he muttered, turned his side to Jep and took the call, acutely and irritatingly aware of the company he was in. Hey.
Hicks, she's here.
Hicks felt his spine snap straight at her tone. Who? He asked. But shit, he knew.
Mom,
she cried, giving him the answer he knew.
She's making a huge scene. She knows. She knows it's my day off and I come here to see Andy and she's here, shouting and carrying on and demanding to see him, saying I'm keeping her away from her baby and...
He snatched the keys to his Ram from the desk and cut her off. You with Andy?
I can't get to him. She keeps shouting at me and getting in my space, shoving me off. I can't get in a catfight with my mother in Andy's home, Hicks.
Her voice had been rising, but it dropped with her next in her increasing panic.
I know he's hearing it. Everyone is, but his room isn't far from the front, and it's probably freaking him out.
That was not good. But no, hell no. That bitch did not put her hands on Greta. Go sit in your car, he ordered, moving by Jep, dipping his chin, saying, gotta take this. And that was it. He was out the door.
Go sit in my car?
She asked, her voice pitching higher, with her also increasing anxiety. Go sit in your car, he demanded, and stopped between Donna and Betz's desks. Both of you, he looked between them. In a Ram, follow me.
Hicks,
Greta called in his ear as he started moving again, feeling Donna and Betz move behind him. I'm coming. I'm bringing some deputies. She can either calm down and remove herself from the premises, or she can be arrested for trespassing and disturbing the peace. But I'll be giving her that choice. You'll be sitting in your car while I'm doing it.
It'll take you 20 minutes to get here, and...
Not with my lights on.
Oh,
she mumbled. Get in your car, baby.
Okay, Hicks.
I'll be there in 10.
Right. Okay.
Letting you go now.
Okay, darling. See you.
You will. He hung up, standing by his Ram with Donna and Bette standing with him, eyes to him. Greta's mom is at the home where her brother stays. Greta is his guardian. Her mother is a lot of things, including the woman who gave him the injuries he has that put him in the home by driving drunk and getting in an accident when he was a teenager. That got him big eyes from Betts, narrow ones from Donna. But he ignored both and kept going. Greta's denied her mother access to him. She's there causing a scene. You heard what I said to Greta?
Yeah, boss,
Betts replied.
Yeah, Hickson,
Donna said. Follow me, he commanded, went to his Ram, angled in, and rolled out. The light on his dash and the two that blinked through the grill going as he raced to Sunnydown, with Donna driving the Ram, Betts in the passenger seat following him. He got the call from Reva that Sunnydown had reported the disturbance on the way. He swung in at the diagonal yellow lines that were at the front doors of Sunnydown, but he'd caught sight of Greta getting out of her Cherokee as he swung in. Donna swung in beside him as he folded out of his Ram. He lifted a hand his woman's way and ordered, "Stay by your car, Greta." She stopped walking toward him and started walking backwards. Hicks prowled into the building to see a man in a security uniform. Big guy, big stomach hanging over his belt. No baton or gun on that belt, not even a taser, barring the way into a wide hall, staring unhappily down at the woman who was standing in front of him, her voice scratchy from continuous shrieking.
You can't keep me from my boy!
She leaned beyond the guard, who bent that way to impede her should she make a break for it, and screeched.
Andy! Andy! Baby, your mama's out here!
Quiet! Hicks barked. She jumped and whirled. Then he watched her lip curl.
Well, if it isn't,
she began. I said quiet! He bit off.
You can't muzzle me!
She shouted, then swung an arm behind her, finger pointed.
My baby's back there.
You have two choices, Hicks announced. You settle down, get in your car and leave,
not to return unless you've received word you've been approved as a visitor for Andrew Dare, or these deputies will be arresting you for trespassing and disturbing the peace.
I can't trespass where my boy is kept, she spat.
You aren't legal guardian of your boy, so that'd be wrong.
Just because you're fucking my...
Hicks turned and dipped his chin to Donna. Arrest her.
You can't arrest me!
She screamed and whirled again, making a break to run down the hall and colliding with the security guy who jumped in her way, screeching.
Andy! Andy! Your mama's...
Donna took her forearm in one hand, stating,
You have the right.
She whirled again and twisted her arm from Donna's hold.
Take your fucking hands off me.
Betts moved in.
Ma'am, calm down.
Greta's mother shuffled back.
Fuck you! Ma'am, calm down. Turn around and put your hands behind your back.
Donna instructed.
Kiss my ass!
She bit out, turned again, and shouted,
Andy! Hun, no, no!
Hicks heard coming from down the hall, and he looked that way to see a tall young man with dark hair and a serious scar marring handsome features shuffle sideways into the hall.
Andy, honey?
A woman was trying gently to push him back in the room. Fuck. Hicks started to make his way there as Tawny saw her son and shrieked,
Andy! My boy!
Hicks halted at Greta's mother, turned his back to her brother, and whispered, You make one more move to resist arrest, we are charging you with that too. Now, I've had occasion to sit in front of the judge recently, and we'll just say, with current events, he's not in a good mood. He leaned closer. But I think someone else will not be pleased you're making this play, and I got a feeling you should be more concerned about his reaction. So shut your mouth, Miss Dare. Calm down. Walk with these deputies out of this building where you'll put your hands behind your back so they can cuff you and read you your rights without your boys seeing them do it. Then, allow them to take you to the station. Suddenly, making his stomach turn, she smiled and exposed this was all a play to upset Greta when she threatened in a quiet voice,
Buckle up, baby. I'm just getting started.
Whatever, he muttered, and saw her face go slack in confusion. Before he jerked his head to Donna, and she moved in. She put a hand on Tawny's biceps, but Tawny snatched her arm away, tossed her hair, and didn't even glance at her son as she strutted out of the building, Betts and Donna following. Hicks looked at the security guy. Could you please follow them and make sure all's well out there? Then, when they get her in the back of their vehicle, tell Greta she can come in here?
Sure enough, Sheriff, the man replied.
Then broke into a lumbering jog, following Donna and Betts. Hicks drew in breath, turned, and walked down to where Greta's brother was standing outside his room, worrying his lip, staring down the hall where his mother disappeared. Andy, he called, and the man's eyes moved from the hall to Hicks. He didn't look a thing like his sister, but he was a good-looking kid. He lifted a hand to him. I'm Hickson. Andy looked from Hicks's eyes to his hand, to his badge, back to his eyes.
You're police?
Yes, Andy. I'm the sheriff.
Police,
he repeated. Hicks dropped his hand and looked to the woman at Andy's side. She gave him a shake of her head that Hicks could not interpret before Andy stated,
Police took Mom.
I'm sorry, Andy, but yes, Greta's outside and she...
Ta-ta?
Ta-ta. Sweet, hellaciously sad coming from a man his height, his age, but sweet. Yeah, buddy. She's outside and she'll be in.
Police didn't take my mom.
I'm sorry, bud, but we had to.
Ta-ta's my mom.
Hicks closed his mouth and looked again at the woman with Andy. She gave him big eyes. No freaking help at all.
My sister. But my mom.
Andy gave it to him, and Hicks looked at Greta's brother again. Yeah, bud. I get it.
That lady, I don't care,
Andy told him. Yeah, Andy, Hicks said quietly. I get it, man.
Man,
Andy said, and then he grinned.
I could have told her to go. I didn't mind telling her to go.
She doesn't visit much, and I don't miss her when she's gone.
I can imagine.
Andy grinned again. His eyes shifted, and his whole face lit up. That was when Hicks watched him lope down the hall and take Greta in his arms, doing it twisting his head to rest the side of it to Greta's shoulder like a little kid. Hicks's gut went tight as he watched Greta wrap her arms around her brother and close her eyes like she just hit heaven. Andy jumped back, out of her arms, and Hicks watched his frame string tight.
Your face!
He yelled.
I fell, bud,
she said quickly.
That's why I couldn't come last Sunday. My hand slipped away and crunch! Busted my nose.
She gave him that like it was nothing at all, then didn't let Andy focus on it before she grabbed his hand, shook it, and asked,
You good? You okay?
Police took Mom, he told her.
I know,
she said carefully.
I saw. Are you okay?
It was awesome! Hicks felt himself relax, even as he watched Greta do the same. Her mouth quirked as she said,
I'm not sure we should think it's awesome our mother got arrested, buddy.
Maybe not. It was still awesome. Hicks watched as she drew in a deep breath she was trying to hide pulling in and let it out before she glanced at him and back to her brother.
Did you meet Hicks?
Hicks? Andy asked, sounding confused. She took a step his way, and Andy turned with her, caught sight of Hicks, and said, That's the sheriff.
Yeah, Andy,
she confirmed.
Hicks. Hicks and Drake. The county sheriff.
She was guiding Andy to him by his hand.
Trespassing and disturbing the peace,
Andy said to him when they arrived.
What?
Greta asked.
Mom,
he said to Hicks when he turned to his sister.
Trespassing and disturbing the peace,
he looked back to Hicks.
She's good at disturbing the peace.
I got that impression.
Andy smiled big at him and repeated,
I got that impression.
He then started laughing.
But Greta was smiling, so that was when Hicks fully relaxed.
Do you, wanna maybe,
she stammered, then swallowed and finished.
Maybe ask the sheriff if he wants to come to lunch with us?
Hicks felt a burn in his gut like he'd just put back a good bourbon.
Yeah!
Andy exclaimed.
Yeah, Sheriff. Wanna eat with us?
He asked.
You can call me Hicks, Andy, and yeah, that'd be good.
We're gonna go to the Harlequin for chicken fingers,
he shared. Hicks had been wanting to take Greta to the Harlequin for weeks. But right then, he didn't give one shit that the first time they sat opposite each other in a booth there, her brother would be with them.
Sounds good, Hicks said.
Can I ride in your cop car with you?
Andy asked.
Andy,
Greta started.
It's a cop truck, bud, and sure, your sister thinks it's okay.
Andy's head swung to Greta.
If Hicks says it's okay by me,
she allowed. Andy beamed at her, then to Hicks. Hicks grinned at him, and then to Greta.
We'll meet you there?
She nodded, biting her lip, but it didn't quite hide her smile. A smile that was shining at him from her big eyes.
Ready to go?
He asked Andy.
Go,
he said. Then he started into his room but looked back.
Jacket,
he explained, and he disappeared. Greta got close, and Hicks looked down to her.
Are you... I put you on the spot, is this okay?
She asked.
Hell yeah,
he answered. That was when she aimed the full force of her smile at him. Hicks fought back a blink.
Ready,
Andy declared, jumping out of his room.
Right, let's go, man,
Hicks invited, wanting to touch Greta, give her a kiss, but just giving her a look before he started down the hall. Andy walking beside him, Greta beside her brother.
Whoa! Way cooler than a cop car,
Andy declared when he saw the Ram. Hicks bleeped the locks, and Andy moved to the passenger side door. Greta got close and skimmed the back of her fingers against his. He looked down at her. He'll be okay with me.
I know,
she whispered, and more of that bourbon feel hit his gut. She smiled, looked to her brother, waved, and yelled.
See you there.
Yeah,
he he yelled back from inside the truck. She moved to her Cherokee. Hicks got behind the wheel.
You can't do it, you know, because this isn't official or anything. But later, when we get there, can you turn on the lights?
Andy asked when he'd started up the truck. He looked to Greta's brother.
Absolutely.
Cool,
Andy whispered. Hicks backed out and idled, making a point that Greta caught. So she pulled out in front of him, and he and her brother followed her back to town, straight to the Harlequin. For a variety of reasons, Hicks was in a far better mood when he returned to his department than he was when he'd left it. And it was so much better, Tawny calling out to him as he walked down the aisle.
We can get a curtain, Sheriff. Put it up. Then I can give you the mother part of the mother-daughter experience all private-like.
Didn't shake it in the slightest. He'd barely looked at her when Donna said loudly,
Perhaps due to the uncanny resemblance, they gave Greta to the wrong woman at the hospital.
Hicks grinned at his deputy.
You being a man-woman and all. Just because you couldn't get any dick unless you paid for it doesn't mean you should be ugly to a sister.
Tawny sneered to Donna. Donna looked over her shoulder at Greta's mother.
I'll tell my husband that after I give him his nightly blowjob.
Hal let out a bark of laughter. Hicks swallowed his.
Tell him. He wants to feel how good it is when it's really done right. He should give me a call.
Tawny returned.
Honey, if he ever gets the urge for Agent Skank, I'll send him right your way. And he gets that disgusting urge, you can have him.
Donna fired back. Tawny shot hate from her eyes, but fortunately, shut up. Hicks went to his office to make a call he knew he was going to enjoy. Not half as much as he enjoyed being let in over lunch on the suite Greta had with her brother. But it would still feel good. Allowing Andy to turn on his lights outside the Harlequin might have been a good call. But Hicks suspected he just loved his sister. So when Greta pulled Hicks into the booth beside her, making a point that Andy's damaged brain didn't miss, it just made him grin at them a lot during lunch. It made Hicks feel like he downed a double shot of the finest bourbon there was.
Yo, Hickson, how's it hanging, son?
Kavanaugh Becker said his greeting when he picked up Hicks's call.
Courtesy call, Becker, Hicks replied. We got your woman down here, arrested for trespassing and disturbing the peace at her son's home.
Her what?
Oh, yeah. As he suspected.
Becker hadn't mentioned Tawny's son in their previous conversations. Instead, he'd said that Greta was the only child Tawny had. At the time, Hicks didn't know Greta had a brother, so he didn't cotton on to what Becker not knowing about Andy might mean. Now, he had a feeling he knew what it meant. Yes, definitely. He was going to enjoy this. Her son, at his home, Sunny Down. Silence from Becker. Hicks didn't extend that further courtesy. She lost guardianship due in time for putting him in a place like that after driving him home drunk from a party. Greta looks after him, and she wasn't feeling a whole lot of love for her mom, so she took her off the visitor list. Tawny felt her next move was causing a scene on the day she knew Greta came to spend time with him. This didn't go well, not because Greta's seeing me and I intervened, but because Andy doesn't really give much of a fuck his mother was arrested. But this is neither here nor there for you. These aren't serious charges. We'll just make a note of the arrest on her record, and I'm happy to release her to you under her recognizance and her promise that she doesn't do that shit again. Becker still said nothing. Did I lose you? Hicks asked. We got a problem because of this? You mean a bigger one than the last one she caused? Hicks asked for clarity.